It's all meant to be. Okay. So, welcome. So, the incredible holiday of Sukkot is upon us tonight. And when I say incredible, there are, like, if you look at the structure of our calendar and our holidays, so we just had Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and then Sukkot comes almost like at the back end. But if we take a step back and just look at the entire year, they're really what we call the three legs. The Shalosh Regalim, which are Passover, Shavuot, which seems to have been like, you know, it's kind of forgotten a little bit in the general, and Sukkot. Those are the three Regalim. Those are the three big holidays. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are in a different category. So when the Torah talks about the three holidays, Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot, and those are the three holidays when the Jews would go up to the temple. It was a festive time. Each one has its own character and different focuses. Passover, we all know, is celebrating the Exodus from Egypt. And Sukkot, Shavuot, is celebrating the giving of the revelation of Sinai and the giving of the Torah for the first time. And then Sukkot is, we have to figure that out. What is Sukkot? That's what I want to focus on today. Now, what's interesting is holidays. In these three holidays, one of the things that, an aspect of it is the idea of joy. It's supposed to be simcha, to be happy, to be joyous. Sukkot is identified as the time of our joy. So, like, for example, you open up the prayer book, and it says we have this, you know, each of these holidays has its own specific, or it has, we have prayers that are for the holiday. Is it too cold?
No, always, everyone always else is cold. Comfortable. So
okay, because I can close the window. Okay.
No.
Okay.
They're cold. I can put a coat on.
All right. So each of the holiday, the three holidays have a set prayer, and in those prayers, we amend it specific to that holiday. So, for example, Passover says, "This is the holiday of Passover, the time of our freedom." It's Zman Chiratena. Zman Matan Torah, saying that Shavuot is the time that we got the Torah, comes to Sukkot and it's identified as the time of our joy, Zman Simchatenu. Okay, so now we can actually approach it and then try to understand and identify what is it about this holiday that elicits or is supposed to elicit joy, Simcha, happiness. Okay, that's what we have to figure out. Now, on the most basic level, it's the time, if we look at it from the agricultural standpoint, it's the time of the Chag HaAsif, it's the time of ingathering. So you had your crop, the seasons are over, you finally brought everything into your house, your storehouse is full coming into the winter. It's a joyous time. It's like, okay, let's celebrate. But in terms of what we identify, we're going to pull in what are these things that are unique to this holiday that, like, we're celebrating. So one of it is that it's the time when we came out from Egypt, and then we're celebrating the fact that God put us into Sukkot, or he protected us with the clouds of glory. Okay? So we're going to look inside here in a second, and we'll see that there are two approaches. There are two opinions as to what exactly we're celebrating. Are we celebrating the fact that God put us into the clouds of glory? Which makes sense that we'd be happy about that. It's like God miraculously, like, he, like, kind of put his, like, gave us a big hug. He put us in his clouds of glory and protected us in the desert. A. Or B, he put us into huts. Like, you know, like, oh, my backyard, I got a hut there. God put us into huts, and that's why we're really happy. Does that make sense? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what does that mean? Like, again, so if that second thing is true, that we're celebrating, that seems to be the line. So then the question is, okay, if that's true, why does that mean to me or to us that we should be really happy? Like, why is this a cause for celebration? Again, we're identifying the holiday in our prayer, Zman Simchatenu, the time of our joy. Okay, so it makes sense when you tie it to the agricultural cycle, but if you think about it, it's not. The other two, we didn't identify them as anything to do with agricultural cycles, right? Yeah. Freedom, Torah, giving, and then, so it seems to be like we're going to have to, like, figure out what exactly about this holiday elicits simcha, joy. Okay? So now, the basis of this class, I heard probably 35 years ago from one of my teachers, Rabbi Yitzchak Twersky. So, love, like, incredible, like, just a very special person. And he always took the things and took us a little bit deeper into the text, showed us, like, deep ideas. And here, also, he explained an idea that is very profound, that, you know, looking at first a Talmudic piece, then taking us to a couple lines in the prophets, Nehemiah and Zechariah. And then he explained, actually opened up and explained, like, why there's joy here, okay? So we'll go through that. But before I even go in there, I'll tell you what, like, after, you know, every year, every day, you're supposed to grow, we are constantly evolving. And our ideas are evolving, too. And so you experience different things. Like, you experience a Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah this year that was different than the one you did last year or 10 years ago or 20 years ago, right? So for me personally, you know, I've heard the line before, but then I think that there's a simpler answer to what we're going to do here, but they're all true. Like, they're all these things are true. For me, this year, after going through a Yom Kippur and experiencing and letting myself get involved and just experiencing the day of, really, like, you're supposed to go in and recognize the fact that the day is a power to completely cleanse. We're cleansed. So when you come through a cleansing where you're we're blessed with the ability to whatever issues, whatever baggage we might have, you let go.
So that would be a perfect reason to feel joy.
Correct. So that's for me. Like, so I looked at this and I said, you know what? This is Man Simchatenu, right? This is our time of joy because we're coming from a Yom Kippur. We go through this process of 40 days from the beginning of Elul to Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. And you go through that, and if you let yourself and you open yourself up to that and really allow yourself to say, God is giving me atonement. He's letting it all go. You're supposed to, you walk out, you're like, you're cleansed. It's like, also, you fast. So, like, it's like, you know, it's a cleansing. No, but, like, the idea, so that there's something lifted, there's a joy, okay? But, so that's, on that level, because, again, there are other questions that are asked. For example, if we're celebrating the fact that when we came out of Egypt, God put us into these tents of, these clouds of glory, or into literal tents, that he took care of us. Why would we celebrate it this time of year? Could have been Passover time, right? So there's a famous question, right? So there are multiple answers to this. One of the more interesting ones is the Vilna Gaon, who lived in the 1700s. He says, you know, what happened was, if we go back to, we've talked about this in the past, that if we look at our history, so we come out of Egypt, 50 days later, we go up to Mount Sinai, and we get the Torah, and 40 days later, we're dancing around the golden calf. Like, the worst thing you can imagine, right? Here we're supposed to be monotheistic, there's one God, and then we're like idol worshiping, like, boom, right? That's crazy, right? So we're supposed to be destroyed, Moses breaks the tablets. Guess what happens also? Those clouds of glory go away. Makes sense. Here you are, you want a relationship with me? Now you're cheating on me? Guess what, guys? No clouds of glory. And the clouds of glory went away. Then you go through this process where Moses beseeches God to save us. Rosh Chodesh Elul, he says, okay, God says, Moses, go get a second set of tablets and bring them up here. He goes up to Mount Sinai for 40 more days and comes down on Yom Kippur. That becomes the Day of Atonement because that's when the Jewish people were given atonement for the first time in our history after messing up royally. Okay? But guess what? No clouds of glory yet. We were forgiven. But what happens is that if we calculate, and the Vilna Gaon does, he figures out that it takes 4 days for the Jews to get their act together, and on the fifth day after Yom Kippur, which is the 15th, we start working on creating the tabernacle, the Mishkan. Guess what happened? The clouds of glory return. Okay? So if you're going to figure out, so why would this, again, if we're tying it to the clouds of glory thing, which is one of the major, right, there are two things that we said. So it's when the clouds of glory returned on the 15th of Tishrei, so you start to see that this holiday is connected. Sukkot is connected very intimately to Yom Kippur and all that whole process that we went through, which basically, if you read the Midrashim, if you read the rabbis and their teachings, they're saying, understand that this process was like, it was set up for us to take now for ourselves so that we're going to go through things like this in our lives. We're going to have ups and downs. There's a process that we can always go back to that can allow us to get atonement, to be able to, like, you know, fix things. We go up, we go down, we go up. Here we have this process of this going through.
And isn't also the last day, I was just checking the calendar, isn't the last day that really the book is sealed?
Is in the back, Shana right, Hashanah Rabbah, exactly, correct. So you see that, it's like, but this is, so that, this is, it's not just that it happens to be. Now what's interesting is that there is, like, for example, tonight, technically speaking, we're not supposed to make Kiddush until, not sundown, but until the stars come out, a little bit later, which is like, let's say, when we figure this out, there's always a question exactly at what point do these stars, like, which, how many stars, but, you know, how long after sundown called Seis HaKochavim, that the stars come out. Now, why do we have to wait? So in the Torah, it actually says 15th of, in Passover comes out the 15th of Nisan. This is the 15th of Tishrei. And we have something called Gezerah Shavah. The Gezerah Shavah mechanism is that God put into the Torah that if you see certain common words, it's not to be taken as a coincidence, but actually it's to teach a lesson or to combine and take two ideas and say these things, two things go together. Okay? Gezerah Shavah. Okay? And it's there are, like, you've ever, in davening, it says Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Bishlosh Eser Midot HaTorah Nedrashet. It says that there's a teaching that we have in the daily service that says Rabbi Shmuel had 13 principles of how to study Torah. One of them is Gezerah Shavah. This idea of taking words that are common and then tying the things together. Now, it comes, it's based on a tradition of, it's not like you can, hey, you know, I see that word, I make up a, but like usually it was passed, it's a passed down tradition of how to understand it. But the idea of this Gezerah Shavah, of these two words common together, is that we tie Passover and Sukkot together. And we start doing things that we do on Passover on Sukkot. We can't really start the Seder. We're technically supposed to start the Seder after nightfall, after the stars come out, that's right. So too on Sukkot. Where do we learn it from? Passover. Because there's going to be, and if you look at the calendar, they're actually 6 months apart, exactly. They're almost like they're two sides of the year. That they're on, this is Passover, Sukkot. Sukkot, Passover. They kind of like work off of each other.
Two sides of the same coin.
Correct. And they're expressing two different ideas. I saw last night, I was looking at this Sefer, this book, from called the Az Yashir, and he says that there are two things that are expressed, one on Passover, which is the idea of Passover is that we kind of develop our own identity as a nation, the fact that we're the chosen people, that's Passover. The flip side is that there's another thing that the Jewish people are supposed to be, which is a light to the nations. That's more developed on the Sukkot holiday. Mm-hmm. So he says, like, there are two things, and how exactly he got there is a whole other class. But, like, I was like, okay, it's cute. I mean, he had a pasuk that really, like, highlights it, which we're going to talk about a little bit. But the idea of these two holidays playing off of each other. Okay. So now, but I still want to go back to this original thought that was from years ago that Rabbi Twersky taught. So let me explain. Rabbi Akiva, in this Talmudic piece over here, and I'll tell you it outside, we don't have to go inside. Rabbi Akiva says, he's the one who says that we're actually celebrating, the holiday of Sukkot is the celebration that God put us into tents. He's put us into tents in the desert. Fantastic. God put us into tents. Now, my Alana, I asked her last night, what do you think? And she says, well, God still took care of us. So he didn't put us into the clouds of glory going to Rabbi Akiva, but the fact that we were in tents is indicating the fact that God took care of us. Okay. I said, I'm a little bit like, come on, God, you could have put us into, like, you know, the Four Seasons, you know? Then I'd be celebrating, and it gave us a good, you know, a good challenge, you know? Okay. But you know what? They asked the question, by the way. They asked if you, you know, there are three things that we got. There was the clouds of glory. There was also the manna, and there was also the well of Miriam, the water. Why don't we celebrate those latter two? If we're just celebrating the clouds, that's a whole other class. Also, something to think about. Okay, but either way, let's go back to this thing. So, what is it about being in these basic huts that God put us into that would elicit joy? That's the question. Okay, Anane Kavod, clouds of glory. I get it. That's like being in the Four Seasons. Like God, like really, like He just miraculously put us into His. It's like a womb. If you, the way they describe it, the way their existence was really supernatural. God took care of us like that. Great. The question is, according to Rabbi Kiva, this more basic, kind of like, it doesn't seem so exciting. There's no, you know, fireworks. So what are we so happy about? Again, because we're saying that it all comes back to the common theme across the board is that this is Zman Chasim Chasenu. This is the holiday of our joy. So look at this pasuk here. It says, Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 17. So when the Jews came back from the exile, so the first Beis HaMikdash, the first temple was destroyed. The Jews go into exile. And then at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, the Jews return back to the land. So it says there, the whole community that returned from the captivity made booths and dwelt in the booths. So they made Sukkot. They celebrated the holiday of Sukkot. And it says then, the Israelites had not done so from the days of Joshua, son of Nun, to that day. And there was very great rejoicing. So, on the surface, when you read this verse, what is it saying? It says, when the Jews came back from the exile, they returned and they celebrated the holiday of Sukkot, they made booths, and they had not done so since the time of Joshua, the son of Nun. And there was great rejoicing. So now the question is like this. How do you read this verse? Right? It's like, do we understand it that the Jews had not celebrated the Holiday of Sukkot since the time of Joshua? Which is crazy because, you know, like, who was in between Joshua and this time is like King David, King Solomon. They had a temple. They weren't celebrating the Holiday of Sukkot. They had not celebrated that holiday. It cannot be. I mean, at least it doesn't, on the surface, this verse does not seem to make sense. But if I read it a different way and I say, you know what's unique? Actually, what I would say is that they had not celebrated this holiday since the time of Joshua in this, community. What?
Community.
As a community, or, and also, what else? What's the last line? And there was a great, there was a very great rejoicing. Okay? Now, what's the common thread between the time of Joshua and the time of Nehemiah, Ezra and Nehemiah, is that the Jewish people had not been in the land of Israel, and they returned to the land of Israel, right? They entered in the time of Joshua, right? The Jews were in the desert 40 years, and at the time of Joshua, they came into the land of Israel. So too, at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, they were in captivity, and they returned back to the land of Israel, okay? So you see that there's a common theme, and we're saying, so these two times had this common thread, that they both were times of post-exile, returning back to the land, and then this line, and there was very great rejoicing. Okay, so that there's the common theme. Not that, I wouldn't read the verse to say that they had not celebrated the holiday at all, but rather they celebrated this holiday now, at the time of Ezra Nehemiah, similar to the when they had been coming into the land at the time of Joshua. Okay? Because they were coming from a time of difficulty, a time of exile in a sense. They had not been in a resting place, so to speak. And at the end of it, they come in and there's a great joy. Now, why is that? Okay. So part of the idea of this holiday of Sukkot, one of the aspects that we're celebrating is we go into this temporary dwelling. We go into a transient type of dwelling. And it what happens in these times, let's say, we look at this Joshua time and this Nehemiah time, is that they went through some kind of transition, only to finally culminate with coming to a final, there's like a closure, so to speak. Okay? Now, if you open up the book of the Torah and you read about the Jewish people's experience in the Midbar, like I have a friend, he likes to say that his family, they like to complain a lot. Okay? And he says, his joke is yeah, well he
no
says, right, exactly. Okay, so this is, so understand where it comes from. So he said, his joke is that if his family was in the desert, they would have been in the top, because they are the biggest complainers, right? Because if you look at if you read it over and over, the story is this idea, the Jews are constantly coming to Moses and to God saying, they're complaining, right? We don't have this, and we don't have that, it was better in Egypt.
Yeah.
They say, it's better
like
in Egypt.
Really plan,
right?
Like what's going
on? But it was better, they constantly are saying, we were better off in Egypt. Now, is that true? They were slaves in Egypt, right? So what do we see here is that to go from not being slaves to being free people, it doesn't happen like that. If anything, you see how hundreds of years can go by and you're still struggling with slavery issues, slave mentality. It's something that doesn't just happen. There was a real need to work through this. It was a process. And it's not easy, okay? But when you finally get through to that end point, there's nothing greater, right? So when we go through life's difficulties, transition is painful. We're always constantly, you know what? It's like, it's like, I know that I'm better off in where I'm now, but I want to go back to what I know. I want to, the bad known is better than right?
Mm-hmm.
So here, the idea of Sukkot, according to Rabbi Akiva, he's saying, you know what we're celebrating? We're celebrating being in temporary dwellings. Because God put us into a temporary dwelling. And we're going, well, that's joy. Yes, it is joy. How do you know? Because the whole concept is the idea of having to go through transition difficulties, of going through a process of growth, which is painful. And what happens, though, is that when you get to the final point and you can look back and see, wow, that was actually for good. There's no greater joy. You hear? That's Zman Simchatena. Okay? So combining that with what we started with, right, is exactly Yom Kippur. It's a cathartic experience. It's supposed to be a cathartic experience, you know? Rosh Hashanah, our whole religion is supposed to be experiential of going through things that could be, a lot of times, they're difficulties. Life is not easy. And life doesn't necessarily always make sense. That's another major thing. Like, it doesn't make sense from our perspective. But the idea is that we need to go through this. And Rabbi Akiva, if you look at Rabbi Akiva's life, it's an unbelievable history of his life. 40 years old, he actually knew nothing in terms of Jewish law or anything like that. And 40 years later, he became the greatest of our history, one of the greatest of all time. And again, he goes through, and he has 24,000 students who all die, and then he starts again. He went through so many ups and downs in his life. And Rabbi Akiva comes and says, guess what? This holiday, we're celebrating the fact that God put us into temporary dwellings, because that represents life and the process of going through difficulties and then coming through them and being able to look back and say, I understand why God put me through this. And that's the greatest joy possible. So comes Sukkot, and so now the clouds of glory could have elements of this as well. But within Rabbi Akiva, it becomes clear. And what's wild is Zechariah, the last of our prophets, he tells us, all who survive, all those nations that came up to Jerusalem shall make a pilgrimage year by year to bow low to the King Lord of Hosts and observe the Feast of Booths, the Festival of Booths. Because at the end of days, what's the holiday that's going to be front and center? Is this holiday. Because you know what? After 2,000 plus years of exile, the Jews are going to finally return. And you know what the holiday that we're going to celebrate is? This holiday. Because again, it's the same idea. Because what it's all about, like in its guts, is the idea of transition, of going through these processes, of traveling. And millennia of like going through ups and downs and pogroms and Holocaust, etc., and then be able to come out at the end and to look back and say, oh, it makes sense now. Mm-hmm. There's the greatest joy is to be able to see, like, okay, it makes sense. So sometimes we don't get to see it right away. It could be that we don't, in our lifetime, get to see it, but we're told that it's going to make sense. At the end of days, it all makes sense. So in this process of Yom Kippur into Sukkot, we come to this great holiday. We go out to the temporary dwelling, and we bask in our relationship with God. That's part of what we go to, is that there's that comfort there. Like you talked about the idea of God giving comfort, that we have to make that effort. It's a reciprocal type of thing. But ultimately, it's there. It's there to be able to have. And so that when we go into the temporary dwelling, part of what we're doing is kind of like going outside and going like into this place of transition and being out there and maybe not being a little bit more vulnerable. That's really like the vulnerability, because in order to really grow, we have to let ourselves become vulnerable, right? And then through that process, we have this, it should, God willing, it leads to great joy. Okay. So that's, okay, and we're learning this for, these are Rufu Shlemas. A Rufu Shlemas for Sarah Asna Bat Etachaya and Atara Atachaya and Atara Sarah Bat Pesha. Okay. They should have a Rufu Shlemas. They should be well. Okay. So that's message one. All right, so that's the idea of the joy. This is, again, identified as the holiday of joy, and it comes from a very deep place. It's supposed to really, and the way it's celebrated, if you go, let's say, to a place like Borough Park or Williamsburg or to Muncie, it's wild. The days of Chol Hamoed, there's Simchas Beis HaShoevas, that even going back to the time of the temple, where they had incredible parties. It was like so intense. I heard someone say that they like literally 24 hours straight, they just went and they would take naps here or there, but it was a constant like, just like joy and celebrating and just being excited, letting go and enjoying the fact, you know, you can do all the different aspects from the communal side, from the individual side, from being with God, and to really like to have that connect and to be excited and to celebrate that. So that's Sukkot on one level. And the other thing I wanted to just to go through, because it's a very important, there are these mitzvot of the day. So it's just one other point on this. Look at the second to the last line on the page. So it says, in order that future generations may know that I made the Israelite people live in booths, when I brought them out of the land of Egypt, I, the Lord your God. Okay. What's interesting about this line, when it goes to Passover, it says we're supposed to remember. Okay. Laman Tizkor, we're supposed to remember. We're supposed to talk about the Exodus. Here, it's an interesting thing. It actually says here that we should know. Laman Yedu Dor Seichem. People should know. Das knowing is an interesting, it's not remembering, it's to know. It's almost like a deeper type of thing that we should have knowledge of, that we should be cognizant of, as opposed to remembering something. It's like a little bit of a difference. It goes deeper in terms of how we experience it. Maybe also to share it with others. There is something interesting about Sukkot, which is unique and different to this other idea about us being a light to the nations. The sacrifices that were brought on Passover and Sukkot are different, and Shavuos also. But what really stands out is that on Sukkot, we brought 70 bulls on top of all the other sacrifices, which are being brought for the nations of the world. The 70 nations, we brought 70 bull offerings for them, because there's something more universal about this holiday. Perhaps like the idea that there, when it says, in order the future generations may know, it may not necessarily be limited to the Jewish people, but that all nations should know that there's a universal aspect to this holiday as well, that we want to share. It's like almost like we open up. There's a more of an opening to say to the nations of the world that they should come. And there actually are groups that will come to Israel during this time in spirit of in line with this idea, that there is a universal aspect of where we open up and say to the nations of the world, as opposed to Passover, where maybe people like invite someone to a Seder, but like that's not necessarily the theme. It's like, no, this is supposed to be amongst us. Whereas Sukkot is more of a come on in, everybody. And it's indicated, we see that in the way that we offer the sacrifices. There is this idea of being open to the nations, that there is this, like Leman Yedu, is this knowing is not just about us, but also to everybody should know, which is funny because you don't sense that in today's society, but that's where it should go. And maybe, and that's what the Zechariah is telling us, that it will go, that it, at the end of times, there will be that more of a universal aspect to this, that people will more universally be aware of this idea that Jewish people are celebrating Sukkot. This is what Sukkot is all about. It's the idea of belief in God, trusting God, going out into the Sukkah to be more vulnerable and to open up and say, okay, God, I'm here. Let's have a relationship. More of this idea of our Father as opposed to our King. It's like, okay. So now the second thing is just on the basic holiday, you know, the mitzvot of the day. It's in this Leviticus 23. You'll see in the second line there. It says, first it says, mark on the 15th day of the seventh month when you are gathered when you've gathered in the yield of your land, you shall observe the festival of the Lord, right, the 7 days, and complete the rest on the first day, and complete the rest on the eighth day. On the first day you shall take the product of Hadar trees, okay, Esrog, okay, we'll talk about this in a second.
That's green now.
Yes. There are all these different opinions as to like what's the...
Green, yellow.
Right, yellow, pitom.
Yeah, you got it.
No pitom. Yeah. Right, there are all these different opinions.
Oh, I thought it had that.
No.
You know, you're not supposed to be cooking that stuff while we're all sitting here. The smell is coming.
I'm going to bring stuff out.
No, I'm bringing stuff out.
I'm glad.
Okay, so here. Okay, Hadar trees, branches of the palm. That's right, the palm. Lulav. Okay. And then. Boughs of leafy trees. Okay. This is the Hadassim. Now, what's interesting about the Hadassim, and I'm leaving them in there, I would take it out, but it'll start. Oh, actually, it's open. Forget it. It's open already. Ooh, that's not good.
Put them in the fridge.
It's meant to be. Okay, now these actually last really long. What's interesting. Nice. So what's interesting about these is that they have three on each row. In order for them to be kosher, they have to have three leaves on each row, and that the end of the leaf has to at least get to the one above it, right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, mishulash, threes. Now, there's a lot of symbolism, but like as I say, like the most basic idea is that this is because it tells
us.
Does that
mean if one falls off, it's not kosher anymore?
There's room. Like it's not like, but the idea is like, let's just say that you're.
It's kosher on, right now.
It's kosher right now, and it's supposed to be of a certain amount of tefachim up from the top down, and then if underneath it starts to fall apart, so be it. It's okay. I mean, again, honestly, I have to look it up to tell you the exact, you know, numbers, measurements, and then this is the willow. Now, the idea here. Oh boy, they are starting to come off a little bit now. No, so now, okay, so we might as well put this together. Already. So this goes on the right side. Now there's a spine here on this lulav. Okay, every lulav has to have a. Looking at the spine here. Okay, there's like a spine, and the hadassim go on the right side. This is the hadassim, right?
You're looking
the myrtle.
At it, or when
is that myrtle?
Looking at it.
Good question.
From when I'm looking at it. Okay. And then so now this is interesting. There are different, like if you go to a Chabad, they won't have this thing. They will take they won't have this holding. They put it directly to the lulav and they tie it around. They also will have more aravos. This is aravos, the willow tree. I got it, sorry, I've got it. And so, but what's interesting about this, each one of these, now again, there's the, in everything in Judaism, the most important thing to remember is that we do things because God, the Torah told us to do it. But then we always try to understand, there's got to be a deeper meaning. So we always make an effort to understand there's a deeper message here. What is this telling me? What's this saying to me? So there's a lot of work that's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, opinions as to what these things symbolize. Like this has smell but no taste. This has smell and taste. This has some smell or maybe not.
No smell.
Okay. Or this has taste. Not fine. The idea is that it has different aspects, but the idea that it, which is the gate, is to tie them together, to bring them together. And the idea is that these are four things that symbolize four different types of Jews, like the four sons, like that kind of thing, mm-hmm. but that we bring them all together. Mm-hmm. Okay? Right? Mm-hmm. So that, and then, so now when you make the bracha, so here, you see it, this is on the right side, the hadassim. The willow is usually like the more the, you know, the sinner type of thing. Okay? But it's coming from, they're all like tied to water. That's the other thing. The theme of this holiday is that the water is being judged, and the standout is, there are two things that stand out. We said the 70 bulls that are brought, and also there's the Nisach HaMayim. They would draw water, and they would do a water libation on the Mizbeach, on the altar. Okay, so that the idea is that they would take water from the depths, bring it up for it to go back down to the depths. But the idea of water being celebrated and being judged on the water and celebrating water, because water is this idea of life, but also the idea of drawing water was to draw divine inspiration. A lot of times in the Tanakh, God is actually compared to a well and drawing out life, water. Life has that, water has that symbolism also. And so in this holiday, all these things revolve around being highly dependent on water. So that there's some kind of connection to water and these things. So then when you take it like this, now depending if you're a righty or lefty actually mm-hmm. matters. If a person's a righty, so they're supposed to take it like this. If you're a lefty, you would take the lulav in your left hand, okay? And that really goes for most things. That, like, let's say if I'm making kiddush, I would take it with, if I'm a lefty, I would actually hold the cup with my left hand. The idea is to, but now we always, right, the right side is usually the celebrated side, so that gives it more honor, because the right is the stronger. It's usually the most people are righties. I'm actually a mix, so I don't know. I get confused. I'm like, what do I do? Hold it right, left? But okay, but this is the way. And you would take it. This is how it grows. So I would start when we take it up. We want to first take it up before we do the mitzvah. So when you take something before, you always want to make the blessing before you do the actual mitzvah. So what do? We take it up upside down. Not the whole lulav thing. That would be just like crazy, right? Okay. You take the esrog and you take it like this. You would make the blessing. Asher kiddushanu mitzvah itzvanu al netilas lulav, taking up the lulav. And then you turn it over and then we shake. Here's another thing of this idea of shaking directions. So like there are different customs on that. But the idea is to like the different directions that God is everywhere, right? So the front, east, west, north, east, west, north, south, and then up and down. So like there are people who will go like this, you know, holding everything together to the four directions and then up and down. When we say Hallel, for example, we say Hodu LaHashem Ki Tov Ki Lo Chasdo. We'll say to each word except for God's name, we'll do a different direction. So Hodu LaHashem Ki Tov. Holy, like bless God because He is good, or praise God, He's good. Ki li olam, because forever His chesed, His goodness, His grace to us. And so each one gets a different direction. And then also when we say Ana Hashem Hoshiana, we also wave lulav. Ana Hashem is God, we beseech God to give us, to save us. Hoshiana. And then also we ask Him to be matzliach, to give us hatzlacha, to be successful. What's interesting is that we only shake the lulav when we say Hoshiana, save us. But when we, and then when it comes to the success, we stand still. So I heard this from a rabbi years ago, one of my teachers. He said, you know why we shake the lulav only when we ask for God to save us, but when we ask for success, we stand still. He says, when we want to ask for saving, we need to put in that effort as well. We're partners with God on that. Whether we're successful again or not, that's up to God. We stand still. Right? So we shake Ana Hashem Hoshia, and then Na. But then when it comes to Tzlichon, we stand still. And then Hodul Hashem again, we start shaking, always standing still when it comes to God's name. Okay? So that's this and the going out to the Sukkah. The idea is that when we have a major meal, we're supposed to eat and spend a lot of time in the Sukkah. Again, to be going outside of our homes and to really move it all out there to like be able to like kind of like go out into nature and to connect with Hashem.
So you wrote up 2 points that I unless I heard wrong, but one was about celebrating water and one was about judging water. I don't understand. Like celebrating, I understand.
Right. So the idea that God is also in the process of this holiday, that there is a judgment of in terms of water that's going on as well. And we're celebrating at the same time, we're spending time, as we're being judged, we're also in the process as well. There's a celebration. Okay, so I'm sorry. So in terms of how much water, how much rain we're going to get over the course of the next year, what's interesting, so you might ask, Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment, but there are other days that are judged as well. Everything that, all the potential of what's going to come our way was decided on Rosh Hashanah. But then how it's going to be given out is going to be at different parts of the year. So how much rain that's going to be spread out over the course of the year? Because God said on Rosh Hashanah, you guys are getting this amount of rain. Now, how exactly it's coming? Is it going to be in a downpour on one day? Or is it going to be spread out gently over the course of 14 days? You know, like however, that allotment. And then, you know, in terms of the other blessing, again, also, as the year goes on, everything, all the potential was decided on Rosh Hashanah. Right. But as we live our lives during the year, God's figuring out how everything is going to be rolled out, so to speak.
Okay. Let's check in on the partnership.
Yeah, but there is this idea of the, so now you understand the relationship of we're drawing the water. Now again, this also goes to a very deep idea that in creation there were waters that were together, and then God separated waters. Right? If you go back, you look. There's the idea of separating of waters, the waters that became elevated, and then the waters that went down. And that the water that's being pulled out of it from the ground is going to be elevated and brought back. It's like almost like saying we're going to tie the two together. There's a lot of mysticism that goes to this. But the idea, like, for example, Jonah, we just read about on Yom Kippur, his prophetic ability came, they say, at the Simchat HaBeit HaShoeva. That when they were drawing the water up, that there was a tremendous inspiration that came and prophecy was connected to that. In general, like the idea of like Abraham going and digging wells and Isaac digging wells, like all that digging of wells is the idea of connecting to God and water. Like there's this connection of like we see in water, like the flow of water symbolizes like the idea of like being alive. There's this idea of constant, you know, constant flow of life, right? So that there's that connecting to that energy, so to speak. Okay, any other questions? Okay.
Okay. Right. These are just some of Miri's chocolate chip sticks.
Oh.
Without, these are without chocolate chips.